The following was originally produced for the national radio series Focus on the Family, featuring psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson. This cassette features two tape presentations. First, Mr. Dave Reaver shares some of his experiences in the Vietnam War and how the unconditional love of his wife helped him realize the value of life and the importance of living. Dave Reaver is president of the Reaver Evangelistic Association and travels the United States and abroad holding evangelistic crusades. He has often appeared with Dr. Billy Graham in crusades and on national television, but his favorite pastime is speaking to students in public schools. In this presentation, taken from the soundtrack of a videotape recorded in Colorado, Mr. Reaver challenges the teens in the audience to live life to the fullest. Program co-host Mike Trout addresses Dr. Dobson as this presentation begins.
Doctor, as you're sitting there, you look like a man who's on the verge of having a good time.
Well, Mike, we're in for some fun today. This program is going to move like a freight train, and the reason is because our guest, by way of videotape and then the soundtrack from that videotape, is a man named Dave Reaver. He is well known all across the country, especially on high school campuses. Dave Reaver was wounded in Vietnam. Part of his face was blown off. He lost a partial use of his thumb. He had many, many injuries. He's fortunate to even be alive. And now he speaks to high school students across the country, and they love him. I think you'll see that in about the first 30 seconds of the tape that we're about to hear. The audio track that we're going to air, and we're only going to hear a portion of it, was taken from a VHS video entitled Davy, the High School Experience. And I need to issue a kind of an explanation, not a disclaimer, but an explanation up front. Dave's method of speaking involves overstatement, and it might in some instances be offensive to some adults, but it is that overstatement that the kids love. And he uses that approach to get them to listen to him. He's fascinating to listen to because he's running in high gear, as I said. And I just ask the adults who are listening to us to overlook perhaps a style that may not fit your taste in this instance, because he's not really talking to you. He was talking to kids. This videotape was made in a high school auditorium, in an assembly, where he was doing some flag waving and offering some advice and, of course, telling his story. And I want to leave as much time as possible, so let's get on with it, shall we?
Here is Dave Reaver in a message that we've entitled, Love Healed My Wounds.
Thank you, and good morning. Good morning. I like that. It's great to be back. Do you know I've waited a year to get this opportunity? Last time I was in your school, I left my heart. How many of you were here last year when I was here? Yeah. Well, see, how many of you remember that song? It said, I left my heart in San Francisco. Hey, I won't sing anymore. Don't worry. But you remember that song? I ought to sing When I Left My Ear in Saigon. But you'd have to be here last year to appreciate that. But I left my heart at Cherry Creek High School. And I'm going to tell you, I want the whole nation to know I love you. And because of such a neat experience last year for me and hopefully for you, we're syndicating this program today to go to just about every high school in the United States of America. And we want to show off some of the classiest kids in the country. And we came to the right place, didn't we? All right. Well, anyway, for those of you that are here, we're together for the first time. You're looking me over, and I'm looking you over, and you're scratching your head, and you're saying, what happened to him? I'm scratching my head saying, what happened to you? No, I'm kidding. Hey, I've enjoyed being in Denver again, and Cherry Creek High School is part of my great experience here, but the other part's up on the mountain. I love to ski. I'm really great. They like me to ski. It helps smooth out the moguls. I believe they buried Volkswagens under the snow up there, because, you know, it's just like this, and I definitely am not that good a skier, but I did learn one thing this year. When you come down the mountain, snow plow big time and scream all the way. No, really, the lift line scatters. You fly up to the front, sit down, take off. It's really nice. Well, I want to say thanks to the administrators and all those who've made this day possible. I appreciate them. for this reason and among many reasons, but I know they're under a lot of heat, and they're always under the gun because every parent has their idea of how the school ought to be run. But they've allowed you today to participate in something that I hope will be a life-changing experience for you as much as it is for me, because I believe in you, young people. You're what makes up America. This is, to me, people who put down our country, I want to drag them by the ear into an assembly like this. And I speak to 250,000 of you kids a year. I wish I could drag them in here, sit down and say, now tell me there's no hope for tomorrow. Tell me our country's down the drain. I'm looking at the finest, the brightest, the coolest dudes. I thought I'd throw that in for your sake. That America's ever been able to bring through their school systems. But I also know you're going through problems and you have big questions and difficulties. And sometimes they get out of balance. Sometimes they get so far out of balance, you do stupid things that you live the rest of your life wishing you had never done. And we want to help you eliminate some of those things. I was no different than you. I sat in school. Trigger and Roy Rogers and Dale Evans came to my school. Isn't that cool? You don't even know who they are. I'm 38 years old, and I'm not over the hill. I am the hill, but I'm not over the hill. Well, anyway, I married my high school sweetheart. Hey, hey, hey. And we ran off. I mean, we went off to college after we graduated from school, and I had a very good job, a good house, a good wife, a good school, and bad grades. I worked so much and studied so little, my check went up, my grades went down, and they dropped to a C minus from a good solid C, you know. I mean, what more can a guy ask for than a good solid C? And the problem was, though, that I got a letter from Uncle Sam, and it said, "Greetings, nephew." See, uncle and nephew. It'll be a long hour, isn't it? And I knew what it meant. Well, they told me to go take my physical, and I wrote back and said, "I feel great. You go take physical, you know." So that didn't work either. I took my physical, studied all night, passed it, and they told me I was to be inducted into the Army. Now, this was the new twist for me, because I was your basic chicken. See, I didn't want to get hurt, and so I didn't want to go to war, because I figured that could, you know, that can be dangerous to your health. So I went down and joined the Navy. Well, I could have gone to Canada. But I was too proud to go to Canada, too chicken to go to Vietnam, and being a proud chicken, I joined the Navy. I figured I was safe for 4 years on a ship than 4 seconds in the jungle. So I joined the Navy because I didn't think they'd float a battleship in a rice paddy. My second day in boot camp, they told me I was going to Vietnam. Now, I'm going to tell you, that was a shocker for this man. I did not know what to do. There were no alternatives at that point. And to get us prepared, I was trained with in what's called riverine warfare. I was with a group called River Division 573. And we trained in conjunction, our running part was in conjunction with the SEAL team, which is the meanest, baddest bunch of dudes I've ever seen in my life. They're mean. They eat rocks. They eat their young. They eat anything that doesn't eat them. And honestly, I'm just telling you the facts, man. We ran till I thought they were going to kill us before they could take us to Vietnam and shoot us. If you've never seen a fat boy run 8 miles, it's totally awesome. I mean, 15 minutes after we were through running, I was still jiggling all over, you know. And then I lost so much weight, I had to tease the hair on my legs to keep my socks up. I came home, my wife said I wasn't half the man I used to be now. Then they said, "Now today, we're going to teach you how to escape from prison." Two things entered my mind. One, I don't ever plan on going to prison. Two, I'm so skinny I can walk through the bars and go home. And then they said, "And we're going to teach you how to live without eating food." The next thought entered my mind was, I learned that in the high school cafeteria. And they said, "We're going to teach you how to use your hands and feet like weapons." It was funny because, you know, I felt like Joe Cool. But I didn't realize the day would come that I would realize there was no Joe Fool going to stand there while I kick him in the face, as they said we could, you know. And we kicked the 7-foot targets, but everybody in Vietnam was 5.5 feet tall. You know, I flew over, hopped back, didn't hurt a soul, man. I was definitely nonviolent, but I was very active. There were a lot of things they did teach us. There were some things they just didn't get around to teaching us. Things like how to die gracefully. Or how to die at all. They never taught us how to say goodbye to people you love. I'm sure I wasn't the only married man in the group. But when I'd ask the question, nobody seemed to know the answer. Say, You know, what's it going to be like when you say goodbye to your wife? I think some of them say, it's going to be heaven on earth, you know. No, that's not the way it was for us, though. Brenda and I, we're very much in love. Newlywed, but that didn't cheapen our love, man. I stood at the airport, and I looked that teenage girl in the face. I want to tell you, when I kissed her goodbye, it's the hardest thing I ever did. And people said to me, how could you do it? They're saying, you, of all people, I mean, you're a minister's kid. Your dad was a minister. You were a Bible college student even. How could you fight in such an unpopular war? I mean, no good American would fight in an unpopular war. I didn't know Americans fought in popular wars. When's the last time you had a good popular war you could enjoy going and killing and being shot at? And, oh, you got me, but move over. Really make it hurt. Here's the... This is a popular war. It's okay. It's like popular cancer. You love this one, it eats your head off. Enjoy it, man. You know, it doesn't make sense to me. I don't know this popular war game. I hate war. I mean, and for every veteran that's here, that's one of your teachers, they'll tell you war's the pits, man. I hate it. It's hell. It hurts. It rapes, plunders, disfigures, it dismembers. I get tired of explanations, people staring. I mean, after a while, you get where you want to just fight back. I hate war. But I'm going to tell you something, young people. Listen to the words of this Vietnam veteran, because I want you to know I'm not ashamed of my scars and stripes, because I love freedom more than I hate war, and I'm proud to be an American. Yeah. Thank you. Obviously, you are too. For America. Come on. God bless you, Lord. Yeah. So I went to war. And really, you know, no matter how much you trained, you're never fully trained. I got on the bus. They had big screens on the windows. I said, are the flies that bad? And they said, no, idiot. That's to keep the hand grenades out, not the flies. It never dawned on me. Suddenly, now somebody's trying to kill me. That's a bad feeling. You wake up this morning and say, boy, someone's trying to kill me today. It messes up your whole day, you know? They sent me into the jungle, and I found out right away. My biggest problem was some communist shooting at me out of the bushes. My biggest problem was in my barracks. Now, admittedly, thank God they didn't shoot at me, but they never tried to hurt me physically. But I will tell you this. They tried to tear down some things that meant more to me than limb and life. And I say this from my heart to you, young people. Because I did not participate, and let's be diplomatic, you know, in their, quote, extracurricular activity, unquote, which basically means I didn't have VD. Because I didn't go along with what they were doing, I was ostracized, belittled, ridiculed, humiliated, libeled, tricked, everything else they could do to get me to break the vows to the woman I had made vows to. Now, you may not be into this kind of loyalty, but I want to tell you something, man. When I told that girl the day I married her that I'd be faithful to her and I'd do, or whatever I said the way I said it, I meant it. And there wasn't any jerk in Vietnam worth breaking those vows over. I loved her. Now, loyalty means something to me. Little did I know then what the day was coming off that would give me a return on that loyalty, that would make that loyalty worth every moment of the difficulty it cost me. They'd say things like, oh, come on, Reaver. Everybody's doing it. I said, well, if everybody's doing it, why are you trying to get me to? Obviously, I'm not. And until I do, not everybody is. So back off, turkey lips. One guy said, well, you don't understand, man. We're in love. I said, you're not love. You're in heat. You don't know what love is. Edit. Now, you mark this, kids. I'm going to tell you. There's a lot of things you believe in and you stand for that someone's always going to come along and try to cheapen for you. But if you believe in it with your whole heart, you stand by your guns. Don't give up on what you believe, because that's you. And you have the right to stand for what you believe. The scars on my body and the blood shed by men who gave everything they had give you the right. A freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion, and your right to pursue happiness. And those men died to give us these privileges, and I refuse to trample the sacrifice of their lives under my feet because I was too lazy to stand for what I knew was right. You do it because it's been paid for by those who loved you enough to die for you. Can you dig it? And young people, that includes disagreeing with me. You don't have to agree with me. That's what makes America great. Well, anyway, these guys are always on my case. And they nicknamed me, three guys on my team, because I didn't take shots for VD. See, they didn't like that. They said, what's wrong with you? Are you really not going to get your shot? I said, wrong with me? What's wrong with you? You're the one getting the shot. You know, I thought I was cool. Yeah. Now, and so they nicknamed me, these three guys. They call me Dudley Do-Right, Dr. Doolittle, and Preacher Man. That's the three names. Oh, I call them Pervert Number One, Pervert Number Two, and Pervert Number Three. That's how we got along, Preacher Man and the Pervert. Sounds like a rock gospel band, doesn't it? They never backed off. Always on my case. You know how I stayed out of trouble? I stayed busy. And that's why some of you knuckleheads get in trouble. You get bored. You got nothing to do. And so you say, hey, man, let's go do this. Okay, that's no, man, that's stupid. No, it's cool. You do it. And everybody says, boy, that's cool. Then you get caught and they say, that's stupid. You're back where you started. You get bored. You think this is cool. Let me tell you something. If you'll keep yourself invested, your good, healthy mind and your good, healthy body invested in doing something productive, you just might find the results can be very beneficial. Instead of wasting your life and your time, invest it. Invest it. I did. I was very inventive, and my inventive mind and my willingness to stay busy got me promoted in rank, and the guys who called me Dudley Do-Right had to call me sir. That's right. That's bad, right? I don't mean it. Well, they actually call me Sir Dudley Do-Right. On the 25th of July, the worst firefight we ever encountered occurred. 13 B-40 anti-tank rockets were fired at my little fiberglass boat with four men on it. Now, that fiberglass boat's going to stop that rocket about like paper mache would. 13 times they fired at point-blank range, and I don't exaggerate, probably I'm overestimating that they were as close as that wall. They may have been closer. Now, they could have thrown the rockets and hit us. And 13 times they fired, they missed us 13 times. Totally awesome. I mean, it was almost to the point of, there goes another one, you know. Look at the dumb jerk. He can't even shoot the thing. You know, we were cracking up. But we were so scared, we didn't know what to do. Man, we were getting just as fast as we could get. Well, we cleared the kill zone. The next day, we were right back at the point of enemy contact. Inadvertently, we beached the boat up on the bank of the river at the very point that the biggest firing weapons had come from, a gigantic open bunker. I saw movement in the bunker. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what to do except the old rule of war that says, he who shoots first lives longest. I learned that on Gunsmoke. I didn't know if there was actually anybody in there or not. When you're not sure, though, you don't take chances. I grabbed the first thing I could get my hands on, a white phosphorus hand grenade. Now, obviously, a hand grenade against a bunker is like a BB gun against a boxcar. It's not going to do much damage. But at least it would put up enough smoke to give us a means to get away from direct line of fire. It would burn down the high brush and detonate booby traps if there were any there. I pulled the pin on this devastating grenade that burned so hot I've been told it would melt the engine out of a vehicle. I pulled the pin back, drew the grenade to throw it, and at that moment, the grenade exploded. Later, I found out a sniper's bullet went through the back of my hand. The only mark on the back of my body where any damage was, a bullet went through, hit the grenade. It blew 40% of my skin off of me, 60 pounds of my flesh off of me. I went blind in my eye, deaf in my ear because the whole right side of my face landed in front of me and looked back at me. I didn't have any pain at all, but I was blinded and deafened. Now, the good news in this is I have my vision back and I have my hearing back. And it's artificial. You know, I have all this is not my hair. It was my hair. It was someone else's first. He was slow. And it's a plastic ear. It comes off. A girl asked me, she said, how do you play the piano? I said, by ear. I took it off like Mary had a little. Grossed her out. She told me I was eerie. Some of you are saying, eerie nothing. The dude got brain damage too. Let me tell you something, man. Think what you want. You can say I'm out of my mind. But I'd rather be at Cherry Creek High School, having fun, making friends, having a blast laughing about it all, than to be sitting on some bar stool in Denver, popping tops, sucking suds, or shooting drugs, or shooting each other. It all goes together. You want that garbage? Go for it. But don't you shoot at me, son, or I'll be on you like ugly on an ape. Don't come down my road drunk, or I'll run you off the road, drag you by your ear to the high sheriff, because I don't believe in shooting people and drunk driving. You listening to me? You listen to me, kids. I'm going to tell you something. I walked in too many of your high schools across the state, Montana and California and Oklahoma and Texas, and 250,000 kids a year. That's a lot of knuckleheads. I'm tired of seeing plaques on the wall in memory of Billy Joe and Mary Lou. And I say, what happened? You know, cancer? Was it a tornado hit the school? No, they were drunk. They ran out in front of the train in their car. Dying like dogs, man. Life is too precious for you to do that. You're blowing your lives for nothing. You can't let it continue. Cruising and boozing is stupid. You still love me? Meow. Listen to me, kids. I know a lot of you are going to try your booze. But if you don't have sense enough to get off the stuff, at least don't get behind a car. Please. I'm tired of picking up the pieces of broken kids. I'm not here because your school pays me to be here. You think your school's paying me something? Forget that, man. They could offer and I wouldn't take it. Because my love's not for sale to you. I came here because I love the young people of America, and it hurts me when I see you hurting yourselves. Because maybe, just maybe, someone can give you an alternative thought on the subject, and I'm willing to take that risk, even if it makes you mad at me. You don't need the drugs. You don't need the booze. You don't need to pretend you're something you're not. For heaven's sake, please understand. I like you just the way you really are. You don't have to be something you're not. You won't ever find others accepting you until you accept yourself the way you really are. When you're comfortable with yourself, others are going to be comfortable with you. It's going to happen that way. I would learn that lesson in the days to come. When the grenade exploded, incidentally, I have my vision back and my hearing back. I can see through my eye, hear through my ear. I can even see through my ear. That's right. We bad. Oh, I thought you'd like that. Well, I jumped in the water, and to my shock, phosphorus continues to burn in the water. My skin was floating all around me. I swam out of the water, was on my knees. I saw the damage. My chest was gone. My left thumb was gone. I saw the damage to my right hand. It was severed in half. This is the only finger that works. And the damage was so devastating, psychologically as well as physically. I just fell over and went into a shock. I did not feel a single pain, and to this day, I do not remember any of the pain of being burned. But when I fell over, my buddies thought I died. They said the nicest stuff about me, you know? It's really interesting. Of course, they never said it to my face when I had one, but at least they said it. And I couldn't tell them I wasn't dead then, or they would have killed me, you know? Helicopter landed to pick me up. They rolled me on the stretcher. I was still burning. They grabbed the stretcher and took off running. The stretcher caught on fire, ripped open. I fell out on my head. Have you ever had one of those days when nothing goes right? They rolled me up in wet blankets, got me in a chopper. The medic thought I was dead. He's filling out my death report. And when they're through, they stick the dog tag between your teeth, but mine is so far apart, it's fell out. So he's going to kick it, you know, get up in there. That's fine if you're dead. But if you're not, it's a pain in the mouth, right? And he starts to hit me, and I said, medic! He almost jumped out of the helicopter, man. And if the pilot hadn't got him, I think he would have fallen. And the whole helicopter, we were dropping like a rock. I was weightless, and if I had him strapped in, I'd have floated right out the window. The thing was spinning, and I thought, oh, God, we're going to crash, and I'll be the only survivor. Well, they got me to Saigon and then to Japan. And in Japan, I very stupidly asked for a mirror, and they very stupidly brought it. And I looked up in that reflecting piece of glass, and young people, you can sit there and say, well, you know, you laughed it off. It wasn't any problem for you. Here's where the nitty-gritty part is. We can laugh about a lot of things, but I have trouble with this because it's an admission of a tremendous weakness. But we've all got weaknesses, and we have to learn how to strengthen those weaknesses. When I looked up in the mirror, this side of my face was swollen to the width of my shoulder. This side of my face was a skull. I could see inside of me, and things moved, and I didn't know what was happening. I just wanted to die because no one in their right mind could have ever told me I'd walk out on this stage at Cherry Creek High School and feel the incredible love of 1,000 kids that makes me feel handsome. And nobody could have told me that day that a 19-year-old girl could still love a basket case. Let me tell you something. When your handsome young prince turns into a frog, it's easy to forget your commitment, your vows. And I said, that's it. Nobody will ever love me. I reached over and I grabbed the tube and I pulled it out. And I laid my head back and I waited to die. It's called suicide. It's still not the answer. I waited to die. And I waited. And I noticed, boy, I'm getting hungry. I looked over. Stupid me. I pulled out lunch. I unplugged the wrong tube. Boy, am I glad. Am I glad? How could I have ever known you? I think about it, man. I thought I knew the answer then. I said, this is it. This is the best way. Pull the plug. And yet, look what I would have missed. I would have never known the joy of the sweet love of my wife. I would have never known the thrill of raising two magnificent children who think their daddy is a hero of Fort Worth, Texas. Listen to me, man. Of all the things that I have had since, hardly a day go by that I don't say, I'm glad I pulled the wrong tube. Kids, don't give up on yourself. Life is too beautiful and it's too short to cut it any shorter with suicide. Get it out of your head and don't you ever think about it again. Life is worth it. All of its problems are worth it, because when the good times come back, you'll be glad you didn't pull the plug. I promise. Well, they got me to San Antonio, Texas, via a very large airplane. But I will forget the day they decided to ship me. It was the day I pulled that plug out. The doctor came up. He's mad. Oh, he was mad because I'd done some damage. He looked at me, hands on his hips. He said, Mr. Rover. Now, my name is not Rover, thank you. My name is Dave Reaver. See, Reaver. Say that. Come on. Reaver. Forget the Rover business. From now on, it doesn't exist. Mr. Rover, I said, what, Dr. Fido? I mean, it really ticked me off. My nurse's name was Nancy Bowser. Rover, Bowser, and Fido. We had a three-dog night right there, man. He told me I was going to live. They sent me to San Antonio. There were 13 of us put in the intensive care unit. Everybody died but me. Everyone died. The first day a woman came in, took off her ring, laid it on the bed. And she said to her husband, who had no skin on him, you're embarrassing. I couldn't walk down the street with you. And walked out the door. You know what psychological rape is? That's whenever your mind gives up on the last hope you had. I wanted to die with him. The door opened the next time. She's 19 years old. Brunette. All-American. Teenage girl. She came swinging through that door. And I knew I wasn't dead yet. She looked nice to me, man. She walked up to my bed. She bent down and she kissed my face, the worst burned part of my body. She looked me in my good eye and she said, I just want you to know, I really love you. Welcome home, Davy. And when she says, Davy, hey, I was well, man. I knew it was going to work out all right. And I don't care one minute that my emotions almost get out of here, because I'm going to tell you something, man. You can't love without emotion. You can't exist and be happy without emotion. Don't ever be ashamed of your tears. Be the man that's willing to weep, or the girl that's willing to weep, because there's something wholesome and healthy about it. I learned how to weep, and I learned how to say thank you. I learned how to love again, because, man, when you've got nothing left and nothing to lose, and they give you love. Well, when even the doctor said Humpty Dumpty couldn't be put back together again, along came Brenda, and Humpty Dumpty is back together again in style. Can you dig it? Yeah. I love you. Boy, you're a great school. You know that. I wish every school I went to I had this kind of ease about expression, because some places I don't think I could. Well, anyway, you read me, don't you? You read me from the heart. I apologized to her. I said, I'm sorry I can't look good for you. And she said, not to worry, because I never was good looking anyhow. But she loved me for who I was, not what I looked like. That's what love's all about. Love doesn't care if you got a pimple. Oh, Mother, a pimple! Welcome to Zit City. I mean, you learn how to get along, and you learn how to love. It doesn't matter if they're black, white. It doesn't matter if they're Chicano. I'm going to tell you something, man. There aren't any honkies and niggers. That stuff doesn't exist. They're people. And because we're people, we learn to love one another. And when you're burned, and all your white skin comes off, or if you're black and you're burned and all your black skin comes off, we're all pink anyway. That's right. We're all pink. Because we're people. Well, I left there. I had one eye, one ear, one nostril. That was it, really. This whole side of my face was smooth skin. My eye was there, but it was covered over. Just smooth, no hair, nothing. Looked like a roll-on. Little kids, man. Little kids would come up. They scream and run into stuff. You know, it was pathetic, especially when I go, rah! I love to see little kids scream and run into stuff. Man, that's fun. I know I shouldn't, but so what? Even driving my car was dangerous. I was sitting at a light one day, and a guy looked at me and drove his car through the Dairy Queen. Honestly, tore his car. The light changed three times. The guy behind me changed colors four times. I knew he was going to hit me if I didn't leave, so I took off. When I looked up, I ran the light. It was red again. I hit my brake. Boom, I whipped my bumper. I went back to apologize. You know, and I thought about saying, "Whiplash, look what you did to my face." I'm going to sue you, man. I never even got through his car. The people in Dairy Queen came running out. They thought I was drunk. Then they saw me and they thought they were drunk. I looked at them and they looked at me and I said to myself, they can stare if they want. But I'm on the inside looking out. And I don't see anything wrong with me. Because from that moment on, man, it wasn't my problem anymore. You know why? Because I accepted me. I quit wishing these scars would go away. And I said, wishing doesn't change anything. I'm going to have to pick up what's left and make it work. And kids, there's a lot of things you can't change in life. But one thing you can change is your attitude about those things you can't change. And you can either let them dominate your life or you can use them and see what a great blessing life can be.
What you've been listening to here on Focus on the Family is a message delivered by Dave Reaver to a group of high school kids. Doctor, as we come down to the last couple of minutes, how would you like to wrap up this special message from Dave Reaver for teens?
Well, Mike, you know, those who listen to this program regularly, especially in the last year or two, will recall a number of instances just like today where we air a tape specifically for young people. Now, we know that many of them are in school or many of them are out on dates or many of them are working or gone at the time that this program is on the air. But tapes are available, and we do that in order to provide the right resources to parents and grandparents and uncles and aunts who want to get good tapes, interesting stuff, into the hands of their kids that tells them to stay off drugs and to stay out of bed until they get married and to do the responsible thing and to dedicate themselves to the Lord and to the responsibilities of life. We will continue to do that, and this tape today is intended in that genre. Our purpose is to provide material so you can help get your kids through the adolescent era. And I think this tape would be an excellent one to obtain from Focus on the Family.
And with that, the first presentation on this cassette comes to an end.